Hey, welcome to the VBAC Link. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We are truly so grateful for this community and all the support in listening to the show. Before we get started, I wanted to plug in another amazing show that you should go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It is episode 406, where co-founder of Needed, Julie, and I talk more about health, especially during our conception years. We talk more on choline and how important it is, yet how often it is being missed completely. In fact, most prenatal vitamins that you find in the store shelves contain either zero choline or barely any at all. And getting enough from food alone can be difficult. It would take at least 3 to 4 eggs a day to meet the adequate intake of choline. And new research is pointing to the fact that moms may need almost double that amount for optimal outcomes. In this episode, Julie mentions about 95% of moms are not meeting their choline needs. Choline supports babies' neural tube formation and cognitive development, and as well as mothers' healthy metabolism and mood. So getting enough is key. If you are among so many of us who are not getting enough, I highly suggest checking out Needed's Prenatal Choline. You can get 20% off your first order with code VBAC. That is V-B-A-C at thisisneeded.com. Don't forget to go back after this episode and listen to 406 to learn even more information on choline. All right, let's dive in. Today's episode is an episode sharing a VBAC with our friend Erica in Arizona. She had a C-section with her first because she had a breech baby that was being stubborn and wouldn't shift around despite all of her efforts, you know, spinning babies and all the things. She just wasn't able to turn the baby and felt that in the end it was best to have that scheduled cesarean. And then she goes on to have a wonderful VBAC and quite an interesting journey from switching providers after being told some things that were some red flags, and she'll be mentioning those today. And then, you know, just overall her intuition telling her that she wasn't in the right place. And she also talks to us about switching the providers and how that kind of looked and how that went for her. And then, you guys, she just shares the most amazing VBAC, beautiful story. I mean, all of these stories are just so amazing, but really she goes on to share this empowering birth story where she gets her baby on her chest and has those moments that she really, really wanted and had a much more supportive provider, really supporting her along the way. So we will get into that story in just one moment, but I do want to do a review of the week. This is by Devin Ray. And the review title says, "To say this is empowering would be an understatement." It says, "First off, I rarely take the time to write reviews, but this called for an exception. I am just over halfway through my third pregnancy with 2 prior cesareans." She says, "We made," and then in parentheses, she said, "Well, I made," the hubs was not on board at first, "the decision to go for a VBAC this time as my last recovery was really tough. I started to research VBACs and realized pretty quickly that my last repeat C-section was not clearly my only option." Man, if we could all say that, a lot of us can relate to that. She said, "Finding this podcast has been life-changing. I started listening a week or so ago and have been binge listening ever since. I will no doubt get through all episodes before this baby is born. Not only have I learned and gained so much knowledge on the birthing process of VBACs themselves, but I have been uplifted and inspired that I can do it too. It has given me so much faith in the process and has provided me with so many tools and resources. So hopefully having a successful VBAC after 2 C-section myself. Thank you, Julie and Megan, for not just the work with you do with the women as doulas, but for bringing the stories to all of us listeners to give us the hope and the empowerment we need to play the active roles in our pregnancies and births, and for putting out all the facts, risks, and benefits. I will forever be grateful for you ladies and the role that you have already played in our pregnancy, and I hope that in 18 weeks or so, I can share my VBAC success with you. You have played such a great, huge role in it already. Thank you so much." Wow, what an amazing review. Thank you so much, Devin Ray, for leaving that review. Oh, it just makes me so happy. And you guys, she said it right there. This place is a place to learn the facts, learn the risks, learn the benefits, and feel empowered to make the choice that feels best for you. As a reminder, we always, 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 always love getting review. It brings me so much joy when I get in our email a pop-up saying, so-and-so left a review for you. If you guys haven't done so already, please do so. It really does help us. It helps the podcast. It helps people looking for stories to find the podcast. So you can do that at Apple Podcasts. You can even do it on Google or Spotify. I know Spotify maybe doesn't let you do the review in words, just a rating. So if you feel so inspired to leave us some words, you can leave us a rating on Spotify and jump over to Google. You can just Google the VBAC link and leave us a review there. Thank you guys so much. And I'm so excited to jump into Erica's story today. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, Miss Erica, thank you so much again for being here with us today and being willing to share your stories. I really do love when it goes full circle, and we've talked about this time and time again on the podcast and just before we got recording, how it's like this is a dream of yours to be able to share your stories with our amazing community. So I'd love to turn the time over to you.
Yes, I'm so excited. I listened to the VBAC podcast before I was even pregnant, during my pregnancy. So I'm really hoping that my story can help others that are, you know, looking for this journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I love that you've even pointed that out, like listen to it before you're pregnant. Because I feel like we are listening before we're pregnant, we're listening with a different brain. It's kind of weird. It's the same thing like finding a provider before we fall pregnant. It's we're in a different brain. And then when we are pregnant, we shift into like pregnant. I say pregnancy brain. I know people say like pregnancy brain, like forgetful. That's not what I mean by that. But like pregnancy hormonal brain in a sense of all heightened emotions and things like that. And so sometimes listening before can be really helpful because you're going to learn things that you may not have picked up on while you're pregnant, and vice versa. While you're pregnant, you may not have picked up on, you know, when you weren't pregnant. So I love that you did that.
Yes. And my provider that I had with my son, when I had my 6-week appointment with her, she like kind of planted the seed. She's like, you're going to be a perfect candidate for a VBAC, you know, next time around. And so it like that was kind of my intention the entire time. And then once I started getting, you know, closer to thinking about becoming pregnant, I talked to a friend that had a VBAC, and that's when she told me, she's like, you have to listen to the VBAC podcast. And yeah.
Yay. That was that. Well, I'm so glad that you did. And okay, so with your baby number one, it was Breach, right? Mm-hmm. Baby was Breach. Yeah. Okay. So tell us that story.
Yeah. So he was a Breech little guy. I was getting, so at 34 weeks, I had an ultrasound, and I believe it was the growth ultrasound. We did a little early, and he was Breech, and they're like, oh, you might have a little bit of time to flip him. I was seeing an acupuncturist, so mm-hmm. I went to her, and I was like, he's Breech, so we were doing acupuncture. She gave me moxibustion. I don't know if you know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, with bladder sticks.
Yeah. So I was like doing the, like the lighting the sticks by my pinky toe. Yeah.
Yep.
I remember doing that with my husband, and I did spinning babies. At that point, I didn't know about chiropractic care for pregnancy. So I didn't do that, but you know, it ended up around 36, 37 weeks, he was still breech. And my provider's like, we probably should schedule a C-section. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna still continue to do all the things, but we'll get on the schedule. Anyways, he did not flip.
Did they do a ton on their end, or like anything on their end?
They did offer me the external cephalic version.
Okay.
And I opted out just because the statistics that they gave me didn't really seem to, like, the benefits didn't seem to outweigh the risks to me. Just the percentage that it would actually work or he would actually stay. And then, the fact that I could, go into needing a emergency section anyways, I was
Got
like, you know
it.
what? I'm not going to go that route. So I'm going to try all the things that I can on my end. And if it works, it works. And it did.
Yeah.
And so at 39 and one, I had my C-section and I never went into labor. I don't even think I was dilated at all. So it was just a scheduled C-section. And I think being prepared that it was a C-section was so different than you. I mean, I assume it was so different than like being in labor and like working so hard and then having to end in a C-section. So I did feel, a lot of peace with it, but there were elements that I looked back on and it would like, make me tearful, like me laying on the table looking at him at the warmer instead of him coming to me. And so there was just like that sense of like, I want a redemptive like VBAC next time. Like that is the goal. So then when I got pregnant, I was like all in on the VBAC.
Yeah. So, and your provider, you said at your 6 week was already encouraging that.
Yes, she said I was the perfect candidate. Now, I do have a little bit of like a switching of providers as well. So that provider actually moved locations. So they were a little bit too far for me to continue seeing them. So then I switched to another provider that a lot of my friends went to. And this was before I got pregnant again that I switched. And so I was established with them. And saw them when I first became pregnant. And then, I was listening to the podcast, I was looking at your blog, I was looking at all of the research and statistics and like Mythbusters. And so as I kind of ended my first trimester and I started to have these conversations with my OB, like, she knew I was intending to have a VBAC from the jump. And she's like, oh yeah, we do VBACs all the time. And I was like, okay. But then once I ended, I got to my 12 weeks, I'm like, I need to start having these conversations for real, like asking specific. So at that appointment around that 12-week mark, I asked the question, what would limit me from not having a VBAC? And she gave some answers that I was like, yeah, I totally agree with that. And then there's two that were like big red flags based on the information that I was reading. And that was she said that the size of the baby could be a factor. And then she said that I would have to go into labor by 39 weeks.
Oh, those are very big red flags.
Yes.
Yes.
So yeah, so I was like, okay, I really, this isn't sitting well for me with me. I don't think this is going to be the provider that is going to get me to the finish line. And I came home, I talked with my husband, I was like, did I frame that question for her to answer it successfully? Because I said like, what would stop me from having
Stop.
it back? So I kind of framed it in a not negative, but like we're talking about the negatives of it. And so I'm like, did I frame it the right way? And then, ultimately I was like, those two things are like big myths. Like the 39, I'm not going to go into labor at 39 weeks. I've never been in labor before. Like I never went into labor with my first. There's no way my body is going to do it by 39
Not
weeks.
as likely, not as likely, right?
Yeah.
And that getting to that point can leave you with a lot of stress that's actually going to make it so you don't go into labor because your body is in stress mode.
Yes. So then I spoke to some more friends and ultimately was referred to my provider who delivered me, her name was Dr. Brass, and I met with her at 16 weeks, and we just had like a really honest conversation. I said, "This is what my provider is telling me. Like, what are your thoughts? What are your criteria for VBAC?" And she was like, "She." When I said she wanted me to go into labor at 39 weeks, she's like, "Why?" Like, I'm like, "Okay, this is where I want to be." So she said that she is comfortable with going up to 41 weeks is what her kind of standard of care with VBAC is. And then, I learned that she is one of the providers that has a really high success rate with VBAC. She is an OBGYN. She is the only OBGYN in her office. The rest of the women that she works with are nurse midwives. So just a much more holistic vibe from their practice. So yeah, I switched to her at 16 weeks, and she took care of me the rest of the way.
Let's talk more on choline for a moment. The RDA is 450 to 550 milligrams while pregnant and nursing. Though research suggests that upwards of 900 milligrams in pregnancy supports optimal perinatal and infant health outcomes, most prenatal vitamins contain one-tenth or less of the RDA, as choline is a bulky nutrient and manufacturers often don't want to increase the number of capsules per serving. Choline supports the baby's brain and cognitive development during pregnancy and after birth. Choline can be found through food sources like eggs and liver, which is amazing, but more often than not, it's harder to get the full amount that we need on a daily basis. Needed has created an amazing option for when or if you need to supplement so you can do so with ease and confidence that you're getting the choline needed. Their choline add-on is dosed at 500 milligrams of choline chloride per capsule to help you reach your optimal levels. This is a form that can be used in research for optimal outcomes in mothers and their babies. Find prenatal choline and more information about choline on episode 406 and at thisisneeded.com and enjoy 20% off your first order with code VBAC.
And
Do you
then,
really quickly, do you have any tips for anybody who may be running into a situation like yourself and needing to switch providers? Like, can you talk to us a little bit about the switch and how that panned out? And everyone does it different.
Yeah, so I felt like this a little bit of sense of guilt, but I was, ultimately like, this is my pregnancy. So as far as finding her, I was just really, I had a good friend that knew her personally and was, delivered her babies. And so that connection kind of happened organically, and I didn't really have to search a whole lot. I know people
That's
do
nice.
sometimes have to search, I do know that there are, I think it's called ICANN. And they have those,
International.
yeah, and they have sectors. There's like, I'm in Arizona, so I did, so you could look at ICANN Phoenix, and I think they have providers, but I know you guys also have a list of providers too. So there are those resources online. But then I made my appointment. And after I met with her and I was like, yes, I want to switch, I told them I'm gonna follow up and I'll see you at my 20 week appointment. And then I called the old office and I told them that I wasn't going to be continuing under their care any longer. And it was the front desk person that I talked to. And when she asked why, I just said I'm feeling, pulled in a different direction so I can have a successful VBAC. So I was honest with the
Honest,
office
yeah.
about that. So
So you told them, and then they just transferred your records, I assume.
yeah, yes, they
Awesome.
just transferred my records. They like, as far as like that, I never remember what it's called, but when you have to like give them a lump sum for like all your
Oh,
OB
your
care.
global fee.
Yes. So I hadn't done that yet. So I was able to just, they were just able to just take that out of the equation, like it was
Nice.
just gone. But yeah, that I'm not sure how that would have worked if I had already paid that. But it was pretty seamless. And then I
Good.
didn't really, I think I had an appointment scheduled that they called, and I was like, oh, I'm no longer under your care anymore. But
Love it.
Awesome. Thanks so much. I just know that sometimes people feel like I don't know what to do. So it's kind of nice to hear what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, I would just encourage anyone who is thinking about switching, just you have to do what's best for you and your pregnancy. And if that is switching, then it could be good for that provider to have that happen and then go, oh, okay, how can I support these women more? So I think it's
Yeah.
ultimately a win-win on everyone's
Right.
side.
And sometimes when a provider isn't a good fit for us, we're not a good patient fit for them either, because we're going to be asking them to go outside of their comfort zone, or we're going to be fighting back, and that's not going to be fun for either person. And so sometimes we get that like guilty feeling, or like I was like, I feel like I'm cheating on him if I leave because he's like helped me with his my last baby, you know. No, it's usually better for both of you.
Yes,
Yeah.
definitely. And you're like, I could already sense with my old provider, I could already sense like this discomfort in asking questions. And you just get that kind of like vibe, like I'm making you uncomfortable, you're making me uncomfortable. Like it's just
Right.
not meshing.
Right. Yeah. Well, proud of you for switching. So your next visit was 20 weeks, and let's keep going.
Yeah. So I, had a great pregnancy overall. Everything went routine. I did a lot to prepare my body. So this time around, I did chiropractic care starting at about 20 weeks. And I saw Dr. Jenny, have to shout her out because she is amazing. And yeah, I saw her routinely. I hired a doula. So, and that is Miss Jules the doula, and she actually also runs hypnobirthing.
Awesome.
So, yeah, so she like it's all included in her package. You hire her and you also get all of her hypnobirthing, the book and her class and everything. So, I did that with her. And then I also did pelvic floor PT. So
Yay.
I was hitting every single thing that I could do. I really prepared my body.
Yeah, you did.
And then at, I think about, I want to say it was about 30 or 32 weeks, we were pretty sure that my baby was occiput anterior. So, right, that's when they're like sunny side up.
That's posterior. Yeah, occiput. OP is when they're sunny side up. Anterior is when their back's against your belly.
Okay, so she was OP.
She was, yeah. So her back was against your back.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So my chiropractor, I told her we were like working on that. I was doing spinning babies. What's the other one?
Mile
Circuit.
circuit.
Yeah, the mile circuit. I was doing all of the things, and then at pelvic floor PT, I think, probably helped as well, because that's a lot of, pelvic floor work. But so there was that element of things of, I'm like sitting on my ball, trying to sit up, like not lay back on the couch, trying to get her to turn around. And ultimately, she did not. She stayed in that position. And I remember my chiropractor saying, like, I'm not gonna, sometimes babies are in a position for a reason. And so I'm not gonna push it too much. But the pelvic floor PT, I want to go back to that. It was insanely cool because not only did I do like pelvic floor workouts, but closer to my like due date around, I think my last appointment was around like 38 weeks, we did biofeedback. And so I got into different positions to see what the best positions were for labor.
Love that. That is really, really cool and beneficial.
It was so cool, so beneficial. So we found out that on my left side and like a deep squat was when my pelvic floor was the most relaxed.
Awesome.
Yes. So that was a really cool experience. And I was like, why isn't this like the standard? Like, it's just a little
I
probe
know.
machine. Like, everyone should do this because then you can know like where you need to be. But as we got closer, I think it was about 38 weeks, I did have a cervical check. And I will say, I am in the medical field. I am not opposed to medical intervention, but I wanted to have a more hands-off approach, but not like totally hands-off. Like, I was okay with cervical checks and things of that nature. So I was curious. I wanted to know, like, where are we? Because everyone is like, oh my gosh, you're so low. Oh my gosh, you're going to go into labor any day. Definitely curiosity got the best of me. And I was like, let's see. And so at 38 weeks, I was 1 centimeter and about 50% effaced. So that got me really excited. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, like this baby, she's probably coming soon. And then my next two appointments were the exact same. There was no change.
Oh.
And so I remember at my second to last appointment, so I was 39 in change, my OB was like, let's get a biophysical profile, make sure everything's still good, good to go. Because she was good with me going past my due date and going to 41 weeks. And she also was a little bit picky about induction. So she wanted my like stats with my effacement and my dilation and position. She wanted them to be a little bit different for her to induce. But on the flip side of that, she was okay with me going, further along. So it's not like she was like, oh, we can't induce and, this is this. Like, she's just like, let your body do its thing. So my last appointment, I was 40 weeks, one day. I got the biophysical profile, and I think they look at like eight, they give it like a score of 8, just what they look, what they're looking at, like movement of certain body parts. And she got like, my baby got like an 8 out of 8 score. So she was totally fine being in there. And she was still like, my cervical checks were so painful. Mm-hmm. And she was still anterior. I mean, posterior.
Posterior.
Sorry. And so that's why they were thinking that like that was contributing to me not progressing, is because of her position. She wasn't putting the right, pressure on my cervix.
Right. And you weren't contracting either. Like, so that can help. But when they're in a nice settled down position before labor begins, sometimes that pressure can cause that effacement and dilation before labor begins.
Mm-hmm. And that reminds me, I think around 38 weeks, I had like a prodromal labor like mm-hmm. moment. And so, and then obviously that turned into nothing. But I did feel what that prodromal like labor felt like. Honestly, I think I was just a little dehydrated that day. Like, yeah. I had a really busy day position. At work.
Yeah. Yeah. Position, prodromal labor, hydration for sure. Position can be a thing where your uterus is like, ooh, let's try to move. Let's try to get this baby, and sometimes that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So at that 40 weeks, one day, I was feeling like so discouraged. And I met with one of the midwives that day for my appointment. And she was really encouraging. She's like, whatever you're feeling, whatever you want to do, like, we're going to do what you feel is best. But she was really encouraging of just like rest, let your body like do its work, try to relax. But I went into a full on spiral. Like, I was so done with being pregnant. Like, I was so bloated. I was just like, wanted my baby to come. And so that was a Thursday. The next day, Friday, I'm like calling the office, like begging for a C-section that day. I was like, quickly forgot all the work that I did to get to that moment. I was like, I am so done. My OB called me on her personal phone And she was like, Erica, what is going on? And I was just like, I'm not in a good headspace. Like mentally, I am just not doing okay. And she's like, okay, well, you're not having a C-section today. You're not ready to have a baby today. And we're not doing it. She was like, let's get it on the schedule for when you turn 41 weeks. If you're not there at 41 weeks, we will do a C-section. So I was initially like really upset with that response. I remember calling my husband and just bawling my eyes out. Like, I want my baby now. like a little bit of a temper tantrum, but I calmed down. And meanwhile, I'm like at home with my toddler. And so my mom came over so she could be with my toddler. And I just like laid down and I rested. I had a chiropractic appointment that day that I ended up going to. It was like in the late afternoon. And I was on the table. I was talking to her and I was like, I've had a, you know, it's interesting. When I was laying down earlier, I had a lot of cramping. And then I got up to come here, it stopped. But now that I'm laying on the table again, I'm cramping again. Mm. And she was like, that's interesting. Pay attention to that and just rest. Mm-hmm. So I went home and I rested. And I felt that Friday night, I felt like prodromal labor again.
Mm.
So you know, I was having contractions, but they weren't really painful. They were spaced out. So, you know, I ended up going to sleep and just staying asleep all night. And then I woke up on Saturday and same thing, like still kind of felt like prodromal labor, like all day Saturday. And then I noticed when I would get up, it would stop. And when I would lay back down, it would start. So yeah. Like we went on a walk. I was talking to my doula on the phone, you know, we were just chatting and I told her that too. And she's like, okay, then just rest, like let them come and rest. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. I just literally laid on the couch. I didn't go on walks. I didn't move into different positions. I didn't get on a ball. Like I just laid.
Rested.
I just rested. And then Saturday night, I was having contractions, but I do remember like I got decent sleep, but like I definitely woke up with contractions through the night. And then in the morning, my husband went to the bathroom and he's like, Erica, there's blood in the toilet. And I like ran in, I looked, and I was starting to lose my mucus plug. So I was like, okay. And at this point, I'm still like not, I'm like in denial that I'm like in labor. I'm like, this is not happening still. I'm like, I don't know. It could just like fizzle out. So Sunday, I still had mild contractions and then like, but was like continuously losing my mucus plug and having a little bit of bleeding. And then Sunday evening is when things like started to ramp up. And I was in like, I'm at that point, I was like, okay, I'm in labor. So my mom stayed with us. So she was, you know, helping with my toddler and I was just in bed laboring. I remember I got up to like help put my son to bed. And again, everything like just kind of calmed down. And it was the weirdest thing because I prepared so much with like movement and, you know, learning about different positions to be in and all these things. And quite literally the opposite is what I needed to do. Like I just needed my body to lay still, which is everything that you don't learn. Like you learn that you need to move.
I know, but sometimes we just need to relax and let our body do its thing and not overexhaust ourselves. But we also get excited, right? So we're like, let's go, let's move, let's get this grooving.
Yes. So throughout the night, that night, Sunday into Monday, I was up all night and contractions are getting closer together, stronger. And I'm like I'm timing them, sending screenshots to my doula. She's like, you're not there yet. You're not there yet. You know, she wanted me to get to the 1-1. She wanted me to be at 1-1-4. So
4-1-1.
4 minutes. 4-1-1. Yes.
Yeah.
And I was just not getting that. They were just not getting close enough, but they were strong. And I remember telling her, like, I am in 10 out of 10 pain. Like, I am shivering. I have chills. And she's like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe you should go in. Maybe you can go in and say, if you're comfortable, say that, you know, you're coming in because you want an epidural because you're uncomfortable. Maybe then they'll admit you. And I was like, okay, I want to go. Like, I want to go in. So this was about like 4:30 a.m. So we started, you know, packing up our stuff. I mean, it was all already packed, but, you know, getting our stuff
together. Loading it.
Yeah. Yeah. And my husband and I got in the car. My toddler was awake because of all the commotion. So he was awake, but with my mom. And we got in the car, started driving to the hospital, and everything got like more manageable again on the way. Like my contractions, like, were, I could talk through them. They weren't that bad. And I was like, dang, they're going to send me home. But, you know, we're going to go in anyway. So got to the hospital. I walked in, and I remember having like a really strong one in the parking lot where I had to like stop. And it was like, it was a very strong one. Checked in, got to triage. They checked me, and I was at 6 centimeters.
Yes.
So I was 6 centimeters, 90% effaced, and yes. Station -1.
Great.
So I was like, okay, we're having a baby. Like, oh my goodness. I couldn't believe it. I literally thought they were going to send me home and be like, you're not there yet. But I was. And so they asked me if I was going to want an epidural. I had said throughout my whole pregnancy, like, I am going to try not to have an epidural, but I'm okay if that changes and I end up wanting one. Like, I'm not going in set with a plan, essentially. And by the time I was having those contractions, I was like, yes, sign me up for an epidural, please. But I was like, but not yet. Like, I'm still hanging in there. I can go a little longer. I wanted to go as long as I could, but I was like, there's no way I'm pushing a baby out of me feeling like this and feeling it all. So in triage, I got my IV. The anesthesiologist came in and talked to me about the epidural. And I kind of said like, yep, I want one, but not right now. I'll let you guys know. And then it took a while to get my IV in because I asked them to put it up higher in my arm because I wanted to be able to move my wrists. So it gave them a little bit of trouble, but there was like 3 different nurses that came in and tried. And the third one, she got it. And they were really good about that too. Like, it seemed to be their standard of care that is where they placed the IV.
Awesome.
Which I was kind of surprised about because that was like one of the things that I learned that I should advocate for is that IV placement. And so, yeah, it was really cool to see that that is like kind of a thing that has changed.
Yeah.
And then we moved to my labor and delivery room. I texted my doula. I was like, they're admitting me. Come on. So she, you know, got on her way. So I'm in my room. I have my headphones in. I'm listening to calming music. I did turn Taylor Swift on for like a hot minute for some hype music, but that was I remember in my hypnobirthing class talking about like, you know, what you want the environment to be like. And I was like, one of my questions was, do you usually have people that like want like hype music? Like, let's get ramped up or like calming. And she's like, it depends on the person and you'll know. And so I was actually wanted calming music. So, but Taylor Swift did play for a little bit. And then I was like, okay, I just need like Zen.
Something different. Yes.
Yes. So my doula got there and she like put on the diffuser. She put some essential oils like on my feet. And just like adjusted the lighting and was, you know, there for my husband too. Like, he was very excited for her to be there because he was like, okay, I'm going to kind of, you know, take lead from her for like what we need to do. So he was, I think everyone he talks to, he's like, you need a doula.
I love that. My husband did that too. He's like, oh wait, everyone needs a doula now.
Yes. He's like, absolutely everyone I talk to, you need a doula. So then my contractions were, you know, really strong, and I was breathing through them. I would get like really like inside myself. Like, I would just go inward when I would have a contraction, and I would just breathe. Like, I was completely silent, and I would just close my eyes and just like, you know, turtle in to myself. And that's how I handled them. And then they asked me if, you know, my OB was coming in. They asked me if I wanted her to break my water. And I was like, yeah, like, I'm okay with that. I didn't have a, you know, I didn't really have a preference either way. Again, I learned all these, you know, the cascade of interventions and how that can, you know, increase your success. But at this point, I'm like, kind of, you know, everything is kind of happening the way I didn't expect it, and it's going fine. So whatever, let's break my water. So my L&D nurse was like, you might want to get your epidural then, because if, you know, once your water breaks, it could get really fast. And if you want the epidural, you might not have time to get it. So I was like, all right, that's cool with me. I felt very in control, and like everything was my decision. If I didn't agree with something, like, I was 1000% comfortable with speaking up. It was just a really empowering experience. And I really think that was because I did so much prep work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I got my epidural, and then shortly after, my OB came in. She's like, so I guess we're having a baby. Like, very like joking with me, because, you know, I had
you had a minute.
Yeah. She was like, I did not expect to get that call this morning. So she came in, she checked me. I was now at 8 centimeters, and she broke my water, and then she left. And she was like, I think she was checking on another patient. But so it was just me, my husband, my doula, and my L&D nurse. So once she broke my water, this is where I get fuzzy. And I was talking to my husband last night, and I was like, did I get in different positions before or after? But in any case, I got on my left side because that's my pelvic floor. That right. was like my best position. So I got on my left side, and my doula put the peanut ball mm-hmm. in between my legs, and I took a nap. And this is why I think it was after my epidural, because I took a nap. So that must mean I was not having like pain anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I put on my meditation that I did my hypnobirthing like practice with. I used that same meditation. Yeah. And I fell asleep. And then I think I woke up because my nurse had to check my vitals or something. So then since I woke up, we kind of shifted to me to my right side with the peanut ball. And I stayed there for a while. And then my nurse came in after a while, and she asked if I wanted to be checked again. And I said, sure, why not? So I was like, I was at a 10. I was fully dilated, but because I had the epidural, I had no urge to like push. Mm-hmm. I did feel like I could feel the faintest bit of contraction in like right in my lower stomach. So I could feel when they were coming, but there was no pain and there was no urge to push. So they were like, okay, well, we can just like let this baby's labor down. So my doula got me in like this like very upright, like seated position.
Like throne.
And then she, what?
Like a throne position. I call yes. it a throne position.
Yes, the throne position. And she used a sheet to like tie, because I didn't have a lot of control in my legs. She used like a sheet to tie my legs. together into an internally rotated position.
Mm-hmm. I love and this doula.
Yeah, she's amazing. And I just hung out there and we just let Nora, that's my daughter's name, we just let her kind of keep coming down. And I think that was probably around so we got admitted around 7:30, and this now is probably around 11 o'clock, I want to say.
Wow.
And so things were progressing quickly, but not too quickly. And there wasn't any kind of stalls in anything, I guess. So I hung out until about 12:30. And then my nurse came in. She's like, "Do you want to start some practice pushes?" And I was like, "Yeah, let's do it." Just very, very chill. So she kind of taught me what position to get my legs in and how to push. I did start on, she asked me kind of what position I wanted to be in, which was limited because I had an epidural. But I was like, let's just start on my back. I did also do that position in pelvic floor, and that was still an okay position for me. So I was like, let's just start on my back. So my husband was on one side, and then my L&D nurse was on the other, and then my doula was next to my husband. And then there was a student nurse. This is a kind of fun part. So my nurse was like, "Do you mind if I have a student come in?" And I'm in the medical field. I'm an occupational therapist, but I'm in the medical field. And I was like, "Yeah, sure. You got to learn." And this young man comes walking in, and I was like, "All right, let's do this." I'm at this point not shy, but it was just something that is funny and kind of caught me off guard. I just didn't expect a male. But,
and they didn't tell you.
No, they did not tell me, but it was totally fine. So he was actually on next to the nurse on my right side. So they had me kind of
traditional.
Yeah, very traditional. My legs were up in the stirrups. They were helping me keep my arms up. I don't know. I still don't know why that was the case.
I'm wondering if it's your neck or something. I don't really know.
Yeah, I think it was so I could pull my core.
So, around that, maybe.
Yes. So I had my husband and then this nursing student holding my arms. And so I did a couple of pushes, and I would just remember, I was like, I feel like I'm just pushing with my face. All the pressure is in my face. And so it took me a little bit to get that rhythm. And then I was like, okay, I need it to be in my pelvis, not my face. Baby's not coming on my face. So I finally it clicked. It connected.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And initially they brought the mirror out, and I was expecting to see a crowning head, and I didn't see much. So that was I don't want the mirror yet, because it wasn't I couldn't actually see anything happening, and I didn't want that to discourage me. So I was like, let's actually move the mirror. So I pushed for an hour and a half, and then my OB, I don't remember at what point she came in. I think she came in 30 minutes before. And she checked and she's like, "Oh, we still have an OP baby." And she, Nora was not getting under my pelvic bone. So she just kind of reached in and turned her. So she got her in the right position. And then what happened? And then we she started to really come down, and we brought the mirror back at that point, so I could see, her head. And during, kind of going backwards, during my labor, there was two times where her heart rate dipped. During a contraction, nothing major. She popped right back up after the contraction. And I will say I was having continuous fetal monitoring. and it was not like one where you could move. Like I was hooked up the whole time. And I did ask if I could get a, like, you know, a disconnected one where I could move, but then I was like, never mind, there's no point. Like I'm not really moving out of this bed. So I did have that on the entire time. And for me, it was no problem. Again, I'm in the medical field. And so it actually brought me peace having, you know, seeing her stats the whole time. And I am an occupational therapist in the NICU. So those numbers are meaningful to me. I know what like the heart rate should be and all that kind of stuff. So, which is important for this next part. So it was like the last 10 minutes I am pushing and my doctor's like, yes, that is it. Push just like that. That is where we want to be. And she's like starting to get ready, like getting her gloves on and like, I don't know, her boots, like she's getting ready. And there was a contraction. I pushed. And so I could feel my contractions. I could feel when I needed to push, but there was no pain. And so the last one I saw my doctor look at the nurse and she said, was that 90? And my nurse said, yes. And I knew that was her heart rate. Mm-hmm. And so not a major dip, but, you know,
lower.
It was a little, you know, a little lower. And she just really calmly looked at me. She's like, do you think that you can push again? And I was like, yes, because I knew what they saw. So I, with all my might, pushed her out. And I was able to reach down and pull her up to my chest. Mm-hmm. And she stayed right there on my chest. And they suctioned her right on me. There was a little bit of meconium stained fluid, but that was not a problem for her. She didn't have like meconium aspiration. So she laid on my chest. She was getting suctioned and stimmed. And I was just like, this was the moment that I wanted, was her up on my chest with me, like immediately. That was, I remember throughout the whole thing, like that was what I wanted. And I was like, just my husband and I were crying and like couldn't believe that it happened. Like I gave vaginal birth. It was incredible. I would live that day every day again. Like it was the most amazing experience that I've ever had.
Yeah.
I'm getting emotional. I didn't think I would get emotional talking about that, but it was absolutely incredible.
And I bet everyone in the room was so happy for you watching you walk this walk and then having that baby just sitting on your chest and having that redemptive moment.
It was so redemptive. And I just remember, like, you know, we had the golden hour. So we nursed. Yes. And at that point I had two IVs in my, I feel like I had two. Because my other one blew. That's what happened. At one point, my one IV blew, but they didn't, you know, take the whole thing out. They just disconnected it. So I had an IV on my other side too. So it was like very awkward trying to nurse her. So my doula kind of like helped me, but I nursed her and we let her cord completely pulse out before, it was like half an hour before my husband cut the cord. And that wasn't even something I asked for.
They just did it.
She just did it. I had a second degree tear. So she, you know, was working on me while I was just snuggling her and doing skin to skin. And then after like an hour of being skin to skin and nursing, we did her, like her weight and her height and all of those things.
So I want to ask, because the first doctor, there were a couple of things. The first doctor, when you were like, yeah, we're like almost, you know, we're in that 40-week mark, I was like, wow, she would have had a C-section. When you were like asking for a C-section, I'm like, she would have had a C-section a week ago. Like, that's crazy to think that. Like, that you would have. And then thinking about size, I'm always curious when the doctors are like, yeah, but you know, depending on size, we'll see. So how big was your baby?
She was 8 pounds.
Okay. Perfect little
And
size.
yeah, she was 8 pounds and 2 ounces.
Okay.
I'm getting her. My son was 8 pounds, 1 ounce. So I'm like, was it one? She was 8 pounds, 1 ounce or 2 ounce? No, she was 8 pounds, 8 pounds, 5 ounces.
Okay.
Second kid.
Yes.
Second
So
kid
I'm
problem, so I
curious.
don't remember.
I know, right? Did the other doctor mention like what weight he would have been or they would have been concerned about?
No, they did
Okay.
not.
I was
They did
curious.
not.
Okay.
No, there was no weight that they actually said. And I'm trying to remember, like, is and she never measured big. Like, I even remember at my that ultrasound that I got, the biophysical profile ultrasound, she was weighing about 8 pounds. So it's not
Okay.
like she there was like a
It
she
was
was never,
close.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome.
And there was one other thing that I was going to mention that.
I wanted to ask, with the 90 heart rate right there at the end, did she come out with good Apgars? Was it
Yes.
all good? Maybe she was just a little stunned getting under that pubic bone and making that
Yes.
movement.
So she did end up having the cord wrapped around her neck, I think twice. And so I'm wondering if that just kind of got tight
Impacted her.
on that. Yeah, on that contraction. But no, she came out with 9 Apgars, pinked up right away, screamed
Awesome.
right away, pooped all over the both of us.
A healthy baby girl.
A very healthy girl. I will say that at that ultrasound, that biophysical profile ultrasound, they saw something. And they didn't know what it was, but it was in her brain. And I will say that there was not a moment to tell me, but while I was in labor and pushing. So they didn't, and at that point, they did not know what it was. They sent the ultrasound off to radiology to read it because it was really like inconclusive. And they didn't have results. They had no idea what it was, but my OB, felt the need to tell me there was maybe something they saw. And unfortunately, it was while I was in between pushes. And my labor did, for a hot minute, kind of stall out. And my husband was just holding me, and he was like, Erica, it's going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. My doula was like, Erica, you're good. She's fine. So then my labor picked back up, but she got a head ultrasound after she was born and she did have something. Originally, they thought it was something called vein of Galen, but it wasn't. It's actually a different, it's a arterial vascular malformation. So in short, it's an AVM, and it's just when there's an abnormal connection between an artery and a vein.
Okay.
And if I didn't plan a VBAC, I would have had a C-section at 39 weeks and we would have never known because she hadn't, there's no symptoms along with it. She presented as a perfectly healthy, normal, still does, little girl. And so if I didn't have a VBAC, then we would not know.
And it was a deceleration area that was like telling you guys something, or what exactly did they see
No,
during the VBAC
so
that kind of said, oh, there's something.
it wasn't during my labor. It was that last ultrasound. So my ultrasound that I had because I
Right.
was past due.
Oh, because you were past due. Okay, got it. So you're
So
saying I
like,
would have had a C-section before, but I was past due. We found this. It was discovered through that. Got it.
yes, and even like. If I even like I planned to be back, but I stayed with my other provider, if I didn't
Yeah.
switch and they, were like, oh, you're 39 weeks where you need to have a
Right.
C-section, we still would have never known. And so, yeah, be back probably
Wow.
saved my daughter's life, which
So
is
what is the long term for that?
so she has had two neurovascular surgeries so far.
Oh.
So she's almost 10 months old. But so because we knew about it right away, we've been able to intervene before anything has
Awesome.
happened. So if we never knew about it, could have burst and
wow,
and like caused a massive stroke. It could have killed her. Like, I don't know how severe it could have been, but because we knew right away, we've been able to get treatment, and she's actually going to be having her third and almost hopefully last surgery on it to completely like cut off the supply. So they have to do it in sections because it's such a long process to get to it intervascularly, and they have to do it under x-ray. So it's like they can do little bits at a time. So hopefully she has her last one and it's completely cut, the blood supply is cut to it, and that is that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How cool. How cool that you guys were able to discover that. And like you said, get on it quickly so you could mm-hmm. avoid some not so great things.
Yes, definitely. But I couldn't, it's hard. I'm like, I can't tell my VBAC story without a little bit of that information, because that is like one of the first things I thought of, like, oh my goodness, if we didn't go this route, what would the outcome be?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even really know all about that. And I thought about that, just thinking about that first provider, of all the things that could have happened and how differently this birth could have gone. And maybe a scheduled C-section would have been a very healing experience for you too, right? Like, I'm not to say that that's not what it would have been, but it's kind of interesting to think, like, if you would have just stayed and not hurt someone's feelings, as I'm doing air quote, right? Or okay. let that guilt of switching overpower you and your ability to have autonomy and make the change that you needed to make for you and your baby. Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that could have unfolded very differently.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
And that's like, you just have to listen to your intuition. And I'm not saying that that's going to happen to someone else. It's a very rare thing that happens. So I'm not like, switch providers because your baby might have something wrong. But it's just to say, like, you have these things that you want for a reason. And you have to, like, listen to yourself and honor that and follow that. And mm-hmm. yeah, you can't let someone else's feelings get in the way.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm proud of you for making the switch, for following your intuition. I mean, I know that you've been with the podcast for a while, and I'm sure you can nod your head yes as you start, like,
yes.
Intuition is so big here. We talk about it all the time. We encourage you to follow it. Sometimes it is hard to tune in and engage what intuition versus fear or, you know, all of those things are, but really tuning into that intuition and trusting that intuition is so, so, so important. But also knowing that usually intuition will not bring fear. Mm-hmm. It might bring emotions of like, oh, but like, it really, I feel like when it feels right, it feels right. You know,
exactly.
And even if it's not what you were originally wanting, it's like feeling right. And you can't explain it, but that's just your intuition speaking. So congratulations on your daughter's sweet birth. And thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to have been able to be here and share our story.
Absolutely. Well, it was an honor.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.